join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. May is Asian Pacific American Heritage Month, and here in the DMV and across the nation, there are events planned to highlight the culture of Asians in America. In some communities, the cultures mix, in others, they clash. This is particularly notable in Black communities that have seen an increase in Asian immigrants. And tonight, we will look at the challenges of culture clash. My guests are Prince George's County District 2 Councilmember Juanica Fisher and Elaine Chow. She is CEO of Asian Service in Action, a nonprofit organization focusing on helping Asian American and Pacific Islanders in the United States in Northeast Ohio. Lines are open. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Council member, welcome to the program. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And Ms. Chow, thank you so much for joining the conversation. Absolutely. I want to start with you, council member. There are events that are planned in Prince George's County that are highlighting the Asian American and Pacific Islanders community. But you are a Black woman that is representing a community that is really, really diverse. You've got every kind of person in the rainbow in your community, and you are, new to the council as well. How would you characterize Asian American relations in your district as it relates to the Black community?
Yeah, I think Prince George's County is one of the most diverse areas in the DMV, and particularly my district has the largest immigrant population. I border D.C. I'm like the Hyattsville, Adelphi area. And my own background, I think, is a reflection of that. I'm similar to our Vice President, Kamala Harris. So my mother is South Asian and my father is Black. And so I'm actually our first Asian American on the county council, which I think was a big deal and a big eye opener. In my county, I would say, and particularly my district, I think we're working together every day. I think we do have parts that we are segregated in how we come together, whether it's in our business communities or others. But I think we're seeing in Prince George's County a big influx of our AAPI community being more engaged and more involved in several ways.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Chow, probably the biggest influx in the past 50 years of Asian immigrants happened after the end of the Vietnam War. But just historically, how would you characterize where things are some nearly 50 years later as we see, more Asian immigrants, Pacific Islanders coming into communities that may have been historically African American?
So in our area, our local Asiatown in Asiatown, Cleveland, it is 40% Asian American Pacific Islander and about 20% white, 20% Black African American, and then a small mix of multiracial, multi-ethnic community members in our area. And what we are seeing is that at least in our area, we are continuing to see large numbers of Asian Pacific Islander community members arriving in our region. It has helped to sustain the population in our area, as evidenced through the 2020 census. So what we have seen in the historical neighborhoods where traditionally Chinese or folks coming post-Vietnam War is that now, as Asians age and or perhaps move out of the area, the area is becoming more populated with folks from the African American or African continent immigrants. That includes immigrants from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. And what we are seeing is a need for better understanding across all communities.
Why do you say that?
So, you know, every culture is very different, and in the sense that there are cultural practices that might be unfamiliar to someone who has lived in the United States for their entire life. When someone arrives, they're learning an entirely new culture, and they're experiencing culture shock in the sense that they're coming to a country where many different ethnicities exist and coexist, whereas perhaps in their country of origin, most people might appear to look more like them than the diverse mix of community members that exist and coexist in the United States.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're looking at the challenges of culture clash between the African-American and Asian-American community. If you have a comment or question, give me a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You know, council member, one of the things that we have seen, and we've seen it not only in the DMV, but we've also seen it across the country, is in some cases some high-profile attacks on Asian members of the Asian community. From listening to your constituency, what do they say about that, and what impact do you believe that may indeed have on community relations between the two cultures?
You know, I think it really highlights that there's always a silver lining in things. I think the attacks on the Asian American community was a wake-up call, a big wake-up call in Prince George's County. We had our first Stop Asian Hate rally. From that, myself and a couple of other Asian Americans that are actually elected officials, school board and municipal, we actually formed the Asian American, the AAPI Democratic Club of Prince George's County. And we even have another elected that just came through on New Carrollton. City Council just got elected. And so I think the urgency to build coalition across culture is there. If you look at I have a lot of colleagues and friends in Georgia, there's a strong alliance between the Black Caucus and the Asian American AAPI Caucus there. And that's why I think we're really excited. Myself and the club, we're actually having a Breaking Barriers event on this Thursday on the 18th at Rolling Crest Chillum in my district. And we're actually having our Lieutenant Governor, who's our first Asian American elected statewide, Runa Miller is going to be there. And so I think you're really seeing a re-energized activism into our community. And I think building coalitions in the sense that, you know, Black folks aren't the only ones that are getting attacked. It's anybody that does not benefit from, you know, white supremacy and patriarchy. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a real awakening on building that. I was able to go to the White House Forum on AAPI, Asian American and Native Hawaiian Pacific Islanders Forum. And one of the questions or the comments that really struck me was, where is our NAACP? Mm. Was a big comment. And I was really struck by that. I think I'm in both worlds constantly. And so that sometimes when I heard those statements, and those were Asian Americans, Native Hawaiians and Pacific Islanders from throughout the country, all the way to Hawaii that were there. We're in D.C. last week. I was really taken aback, and I really see that energy right now in Prince George's County.
And don't forget, you know, for those who aren't familiar, of course, Runa Miller, the Lieutenant Governor of Maryland, the first woman of Asian descent to hold that position in the state. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about a clash of cultures, the African-American and Asian-American communities. Can't we all just get along? Let me go to Jeannie, calling from Fairfax. Jeannie, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Jeannie, are you there? Jeannie, give me a call back if you can. Let's go to Kiera, calling from D.C. Kiera, thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Kiera, can you hear me? Kiara, give me a call back at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. What do you believe, Ms. Chow, is the biggest challenge, you know, recently when you are talking about Asian immigrants, as well as those who have kind of been here for a while? I would kind of submit that there were multi-layers of problems that were created by misinformation during the pandemic, and a lot of that began to present itself in some of the attacks on the Asian community.
Yeah, so during the pandemic, unfortunately, there was a unhelpful narrative being shared across the country from certain administration, the administration at that time, about the origins of the coronavirus. And because everyone was in such a unfamiliar environment, having to be under lockdown and things like that, there was a lot of resentment, and most people were looking for a scapegoat, mm-hmm. and that scapegoat was the Asian community. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, that led to increased violence against the Asian community, and in particular, the Asian elder community. So we run a federally qualified health center in our area, and there is a independent living building for the Asian community within Asiatown, and none of them were leaving their homes, not only because of fears around the COVID-19 virus, but also because they were fearful to even go to the grocery store for fear that they would be attacked with violence. And so, in the Asian community, it is really important. There's a huge reverence for the elders in our families. And it made us extremely concerned to know that the attacks were being perpetrated against our Asian elders.
Mm-hmm. What do you believe, from your perspective, Ms. Chow, what do you believe is the biggest challenge when we're talking about these two cultures that meet in having them comfortably coexist? I mean, is it not understanding of the culture, not wanting to understand? I mean, certainly we're talking about the need for something more than just deciding that you want to go to a Thai restaurant for the first time, or you hope that your coworker invites you to the cookout.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, there is a history by those who have white supremacy thinking to pit these two two races against one another, and to make it seem like there's a scarcity of resources, and if they annihilate one, that then the other will be the victor, or something ridiculous like that. When the reality is that we probably are more alike than we are not alike, and we probably share many of the same values, many of the same needs and hopes and dreams for our families to gain the kind of economic strength that those who would try to keep us down as a community and as a people, that we all are striving for that same American dream. The black community, came to this country not willingly, and they continue to suffer the the consequences of a racism and an anti-blackness mentality that unfortunately exists in some communities of color even. And so as an Ava community, it is extremely important to make sure that we are locking arms with all communities of color to ensure that we're all united in our advocacy to stop white supremacist thinking.
I only have a minute left before the break, but you know, Councilmember Fisher, it's easy to have that conversation among intellectuals, the people that mm-hmm. are sitting at this table now. But for the boots on the ground, for the people who for the black people who don't think about Asian Americans until they encounter Asian Americans, is that a more difficult argument to have?
I think it is. I think what you have to do is really do the work to educate folks. You know, it's so interesting. While Ms. Chow was talking, I was thinking about the coronation of King Charles, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's all over the news. Everyone's talking about it. And it's saying to someone like that, something that everyone saw. They conquered not just us, but everybody, mm-hmm. right? My relatives, my South Asian side was actually brought to South Africa as indentured servants from India. Mm-hmm. We're at the bottom of the caste system. It's saying that to a friend. Like, South Asians suffer racism. They're as dark as these mics I'm speaking into. Yeah. And my relatives were indentured servants and slaves and suffered under apartheid in South Africa. You know, the Asian story is diverse just as the black and African-American one is.
Hold your point. I'm going to let you finish. I need to take a quick break. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Lucy, calling from Herndon, Virginia. Stay with us. We're going to take your call next. Also, I believe it's Samuel calling from Bowie, Maryland. We're going to talk to you as well. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. This conversation will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we're looking at some of the challenges of a culture clash between African-American and Asian-Americans. My guests are Prince George's County District 2 Councilmember Juanica Fisher and Elaine Hsiao. She is CEO of Asians Service in Action. It's a nonprofit organization focusing on helping the Asian-American and Pacific Island community. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lucy, calling from Herndon, Virginia. Thanks for calling, Lucy. What's on your mind?
I think it's a great conversation that needed to be had because sometimes it's some of our, if we all work together, it'll benefit the entire community as people, whether you're from Africa or Asia or wherever other countries are, but we have this division to look at black people, the darker color down. And I've seen a lot of that. And sometimes it's not just the black people that look down on black people. We have that all over, whether it's Asian and black and Asian. It's a cultural thing, and I think it's a great conversation to have to kind of educate everybody. We are one people. The more we work together, the better we'll get things moving forward as one. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Lucy, thank you so much for your comment. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Samuel, calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling, Samuel. What's on your mind?
Yes, I'm really not hurt by who's in my neighborhood or who's in the area because, no, God always teaches us to love one another. But my only thing is, how come the county only looks out for certain races and not all? Because, you know, we all supposed to be in a community together. If we're supposed to be together, why not be treated the same? And the reason why I'm saying that is, you know, you have different tax brackets for different people in nationality. I mean, you got somebody come in a neighborhood, they get a house, they get housing assistance, they get tax breaks and so forth. Whereas, as you're a black person coming in the neighborhood, you don't get the tax break, you don't get the assistance, and then on top of that, you know, you're looked at funny because either you have a good job or you have a bad job or good credit, bad credit. You get looked upon as though you shouldn't be here.
Samuel, I'm not sure I completely understand your point. Could you help clarify that a bit more?
Well, I'm just talking about the way people are being treated. You say we're different nationalities. That's fine. I get along with everybody, but the thing about it is, why don't the county do the same? You know, they're saying they're out for, you know, they want people to get along and do things, but why are we treated differently as far as, you know, getting involved in the community, as far as putting people in housing, helping people to, you know, to stay into housing? Because you got more people out here helping people that are not American, like I said, foreigners, stay in housing, get housing.
So you're talking, let me make sure I understand what you're saying. So you're talking about refugees, for example, that may be coming to this country under political duress or as a result of a natural disaster, who come and may see an outreach from...
Not only those, like I said, it's the nationality, because I have, in my area, we have a couple of people that are, like I said, Indian, and they get more assistance than... I live two or three blocks from them, and you don't even hear about it.
Well, let me see if the council member can at least try to address your area, and then I'll have Ms. Shaw talk about, you know, some of the complexities of dealing with refugees when they come to this country. But Ms. Fisher, please, council
member.
Yeah,
of course. Well, I think Prince George's County, we do the best effort to treat everyone different. Everyone from different backgrounds equally. But I think there's a difference, and we could have a whole show about equality and equity. That's a whole nother hour. So I would say that it depends what you're seeing. We have different nonprofits that do work for immigrant community. We have different nonprofits and give money in the heart of the black community, our black church community that does a lot of outreach. So it just depends on like what the issue is. I will say, for the caller, please feel free to call my office, 301-952-4436, or you can email me, wfisher@co.pg.md.us, so I can dive into if you think there's any mishandling or civil rights sort of violation going on, and I'd be happy to assist you.
Thank you for that. Ms. Shaw, one of the things that your organization deals with is helping refugees, whether they are refugees for national disasters or war or political unrest. That is a really heavy load to lift. And I think it goes, to the heart of what Samuel may be speaking about when, you know, for example, and I know you also deal with the Afghan refugees who are also coming to this country under duress. Can you kind of talk to us a little bit about that and how it may bring some discomfort to people who are seeing, you know, the refugees get the help that they need?
Yes, of course. So the plight of a refugee, honestly, is a plight that I would not wish upon anyone. They are, you know, unwillingly displaced from their country and having to come to another country for their physical safety. You know, there's a difference between, you know, immigrants and refugees, albeit relatively slight, because, you know, immigrants, they are voluntarily coming into another country, whereas a refugee typically doesn't have a choice in their migration from their country of origin and the United States. So refugees from war-torn countries, really, they have to pick up everything and leave it behind. And maybe they get to have one suitcase to take with them on their travel from their country of origin to the United States. And it is a very, very tumultuous time for a refugee and their family. You know, perhaps they might not speak English, and they have to learn a new language, a new cultural expectations. It is definitely a traumatizing experience for most people. You know, imagine if you were airlifted from the United States and then dropped into a country where you don't speak the language, you have never lived there before, and it's just a totally unfamiliar environment for you. Everything from the healthcare system to workplace expectations to school enrollment, all those things are new for the refugee community that we're serving. And when they arrive, not only do they have to undergo a series of medical examinations to make sure that they're not carrying some sort of communicable disease or illness that would be unsafe for the rest of the population to be exposed to, but they have to receive a battery of vaccines and things like that in order to be eligible to even enter the United States. And so having compassion and understanding for this newly arrived community goes so many miles to welcome them into an environment that for the first time they feel safety after a lot of disruption in their lives in their country of origin. So we do our best to support this newly arrived community by helping them find housing, helping them find jobs, because even as a refugee, it's not like a free ticket. You know, a lot of people have this misunderstanding that someone comes to the United States as a refugee and they get a, like a blank check to establish their life here. And it isn't that at all. They are required within 90 days to become gainfully employed. Otherwise, they owe the money for their plane ticket to the United States back to the government. And I don't know about most of the people listening to this conversation, but in 90 days, if I didn't speak the language, if I didn't speak the language where I was moved to, it would probably be difficult for me to become gainfully employed like that quickly. And then also to enroll my family in public schools or go through that battery of health examinations, health screenings, and then also find a place to live, set up food, because all the things that we take for granted as basic needs to support ourselves in our in our everyday lives, the people who are coming to this country as refugees, they left all of that behind, so they don't have pots or pans even to cook food. Yeah. And so as an organization, we collect donations of those types of everyday necessities, and we distribute them to the newly arrived families. And it's a huge adjustment.
Yeah.
And so having compassion and understanding to these newcomers is extremely important.
Samuel, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Councilmember Fisher, one of the complaints that we have heard in our area, and I would imagine we hear this in other urban or suburban communities, and I say suburban, not so much suburban. and I remember the late council member and former mayor Marion Barry complaining about this in D.C. years ago, where he was saying that in the District of Columbia, you had Asian business owners who conducted business in Black communities, but then they went out to their far-flung suburbs. That we've not heard that kind of complaint in quite some time. But certainly, I do remember the kind of resentment that came out of some of the inner city black communities. What kind of conversations around that are you having in your district? Because again, this isn't just members of the Asian community that may look or that may be Korean or Chinese. We're talking about the entire spectrum.
Oh yeah, South Asian, Palestinian, I mean all of it.
Exactly. South Indian, the southern part of India, northern India, the whole bit, everyone.
Yeah, I think that dynamic has decreased, but you still see it. Before I was on the county council, I was a state delegate for 4 years representing my same area, and I did a lot of work on liquor bills. And long mm-hmm. story short, believe it or not, in Prince George's County, largest black, Charles is beating us now, but large black jurisdiction.
That's another conversation.
Yeah, that's another conversation for another radio show. Right. I brought legislation to allow supermarkets to sell beer and wine. And I got a lot of pushback from liquor store owners, none at that time who were African-American owned. Mm-hmm. And I think that actually caused a lot of controversy, even controversy in my council race. A lot of those liquor store owners gave money to my opponent and not to me due to the legislation I pursued. So it wasn't as intense publicly, but there's definitely that sense. But I would say what brings our AAPI community and black community together in the county is our entrepreneurial spirit. That entrepreneurial spirit is strong in the African-American community and is strong in the AAPI community. And I think they're seeing that working together when it comes to those bigger contracts statewide, those big contracts within the county, that it's important to support each other because someone might end up being your subcontractor so you can get a bigger piece of the pie. So I think I've seen the tension a bit in some of the legislation I've pursued, but I'm also seeing a pivot to what it takes. And because I pursued that legislation, a couple of the liquor store owners brought on black partners. Because now I can't say there's no black owned, because I think about two or three brought on black partners because I kept saying that comment publicly. So even sometimes highlighting an issue, it's not perfect, but it still makes people rethink how they're dealing with our community and how they're investing in our communities.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. April, calling from Akakeek. April, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so I just want to make a comment.
Sure.
So I know just growing up and, being an African-American, like how it was previously stated, like the education that we're taught about different cultures, and it's just limited, and then the different stereotypes. But fortunately for me, being in the military and I was able to go to Korea, I saw a different side of Asians. I always felt like being in America, like we were looked as, we had that, certain stereotype as an African American, where Asians would look at us in certain things. And then when I went to Korea, it was like totally different. So I think it's just like how we said before, one of the person said, like, the white supremacy that we have, this education that's being taught in schools and stuff that makes, Asians and Black Americans look at each other differently. And I think if we can all come together and learn how to cohabitate in one place, we can make it a better place,
April, thank you for that. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Ms. Chow, how would you best recommend that we fight against longstanding stereotypes? What is the secret sauce for that?
I mean, I could not agree more with that, with the last caller, April. She made a fantastic point about, unfortunately, the narratives that are taught in the United States public education that really limit and create misunderstandings across the cultures. If we had a more inclusive education system that not only presented what we typically learn in U.S. history, but also to include Black history and Asian history as part of the K through 12 public education, so that we are not waiting until we enter college or university to hear for the first time about certain atrocities that have happened in the United States. I mean, when I speak with newly arrived community members who talk about the reason that they were forced to leave their country of origin because of, you know, ethnic cleansing or a variety of things like that they're separated because they had to identify in a certain way, and if they identified as that they were farmers or whatever, that they were relegated to some other part of the country or kicked out of their country. And I think that the knee jerk reaction for most U.S. born folks is, oh, we would never let that happen in the United States. And the reality is that is part of the U.S. history that we have internment camps and things like that where someone's ethnicity that they are rounded up and treated as not American.
Yeah.
And so that happened with the Japanese internment.
Absolutely.
And it continues to happen with Muslims and things like that. Unfortunately, there is a tactic that is not helpful to building that coalition and building solidarity across all communities of color. So I hope that we can aim that full spectrum and inclusive teaching of history in this country.
Council member, you were saying.
I was saying here in the state of Maryland, we have fought for Asian American requirements in our education system, as well as Black history. The bills haven't moved to full passage yet, but Delegate Chris Valderrama, who's another AAPI delegate in Prince George's County, has fought for that bill, and we continue to want that structurally in our schools.
Why do you suppose that they have not moved?
I think there's an issue about when you have one, you have to have all. And so I will say the debate when I was in the state legislature is, you know, every month or every type of minority, whether it's Asian, Black, I mean, you have Black History Month in the schools, but more intense Black history, African history, LGBTQ+, where will the line be? And it's a huge discussion with the teachers union. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of dynamics to that and cost. Mm-hmm. So it's just not an easy, it's not always an easy solution. But I think when we look to our nonprofit world, when we look to what our children are participating in their after school activities, and there's a lot of creativity within the school system itself and budgeted that we can expand in those areas.
Well, suffice it to say that Maryland is not Florida.
No.
But I think the overall political climate that we've seen across the country, having lived in Ohio, where Ms. Shaw is, that Ohio has historically been considered the most average state in the nation, where there's average population, average employment, average income, average this and average that, save for their sports teams. And that's another conversation. but with that said, considering the political climate, Councilmember Fisher, what may be holding this back now may be compounded by the growth of anti-diversity thought, whether it's Black people or Asian Pacific Islanders or Africans or people from south of the border. I think all of these things play a part in the difficulty of culture class. And as you said, you represent a district that is very, very diverse. I grew up in Lanham, which is the Lanham of 1968 when my family moved there, is very, very different from the Lanham of 2023.
Yeah, I think you're so right. And I think the time to advocate is now. I will also say I was in the legislature with a Republican governor. Right now, my colleagues that are in the Black Caucus, largest Black Caucus in the country is Maryland. The AAPI caucus is very strong at 7 members. We used to be 9, but 2 of us left council seat and 1's lieutenant governor. Mm-hmm. So I think now's the time that you actually don't need the amount for like an override vote and things like that. So I think you're going to see bills under the West, the Moore Miller administration, like these education requirements, gain traction and an ability to pass.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about boots on the ground activity and the kind of conversations that are had in your neck of the woods, Ms. Chow, about culture clashes, what kind of conversations do you have? Do you get pushback related to stereotypes from the Asian community?
In terms of
educating and let me give you kind of an example where, you know, for, as I said, when sitting at a table of broad thinking people such as we are here, that's one thing. But when you're just talking about quote unquote regular folks who have their own suspicions and stereotypes and all of these other kinds of things and myths, not to mention lacking interest in other cultures, when you have these kinds of conversations with members of the Asian American community, what kind of pushback do you get from them when for those who may not be intellectually high-handed, I guess you could say?
Yeah, I think that the challenge in general is that people are generally suspicious of the unfamiliar.
Mm-hmm.
And so to respond to that that situation, we are doing boots on the ground. We're making intentional efforts to bring people of different cultures together in a space where there is a lot of commonality. And when I say that, I say we have events where food will typically bring everyone out, and in that way we can learn about each other, because once we meet someone and we talk to them, even if they look different from us, there's a mutual understanding of once there's a deeper conversation that isn't filtered through someone else's filter.
Mm.
And so we found a lot of success in hosting community gatherings where everyone comes out, because like I said, we're located in a neighborhood that is probably one of the most diverse neighborhoods, even though it's historical Asian town in Cleveland, it has a majority at 40% of the population being Asian. There's like I said, 20% Black and 20% White, and then another percentage of multi-ethnic community members. And as soon as people have a conversation over food, they really do realize that they're more alike, that they're more alike than they're different.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that makes sense. One of the things also, because we're slowly beginning to run out of time, council member, one of the things that is happening in the county is there's just a laundry list of events that have happened that will continue to happen leading up to the end of the month. You're participating in something as well. Do you mind sharing?
Yeah, and I think, Ms. Chow, you're so right. Food brings us all together. So this Thursday, May 18th at 6 p.m. at Rolling Crest Community Center, it's on 6120 Sergeant Road. At 6 p.m., our Lieutenant Governor, myself, we're actually going to be honoring our first AAPI elected official in the Prince George's County, which is David Valderrama. We have a very large Filipino community in the Akakik part of the county, and so he's in his 90s. It's important to give people their flowers when they're with us. I'm very excited. Him and his daughter, current delegate of Valderrama, will be there. Me and Amy Fry, who is council member in Cheverly, we did a whole talk on the about our experiences as being Asian Americans in politics. And you know, for me, it's a lot easier now that Kamala hit the scene, but coming up and explaining who I am, whether I'm in a Black community setting or in an all, you know, I've been in an all Asian room in D.C. once, and people are like, who's that Black girl like here, you know? So I experience it all the time, and I think it's these events that highlight people, bring out a history that people, my generation and more, know that David existed, mm-hmm. what he did as one of the only Asian Americans, you know, elected to our General Assembly and in our county. And our county is not new to AAPI representation. I'm not the newest thing. So I think that that's so important, is not only to share a meal, but to share a history. And it's not always a history from the place we come from. We have a history, as you just said, you talked about your family in the 60s in Lanham. I was totally there. Mm-hmm. I was on the sidewalk with you with your bike. Like, I was there. And that history is also important. A history of the DMV.
Yeah.
The history of Prince George's County. That is important. And that also, for what I find, and you know, I am turning 35 now.
Oh my. It's all over.
I know. What I find in my little short political life, it's been 5 years of being elected, is those are sometimes the most powerful. Not always something that happened 100 years ago. I had this ism, I had that ism. It's something that happened 20 years ago. You know, it's something, you know, something I talk about with my young students. I was just talking to them at Northwestern High School about hip hop in the Asian American community and how South Korea is just booming, and why that is, you know, and that sort of connection in the 80s during that time. So I think that also really captures our children's attention. And so it's so important to bring our ancient history, but also our most recent as well.
Elaine Chao, Councilmember Juanica Fisher, I want to thank you both for taking the time to sit and talk with us about this really important issue. And we will keep our boots and ears to the ground for further conversation. Thank you both so much.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, May 15th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.